This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Alex Bregman in his introductory press conference with the Red Sox today. And Tom,
happy that his wife is enrolled at Harvard Business School. That's an important detail.
Yeah. Hey, but I will
happy
say,
wife, happy life. I'm
last year, Jordan Montgomery's wife, wasn't she going to do some residency or something in Boston? And he still didn't sign here. So I'll say, you know, like at least this time they offered enough money to the guy to get him signed. So they bring in Bregman, and we talked a lot in the show earlier about how does this change their expectations, but more so how does it signal a shift in their way of doing business? Because you trade prospects for Crochet, now you sign big money at least for a year, maybe 3 years, depending on the opt-outs to Bregman. But just on the field, this team went 81-81 last year. As they're getting spring training underway, I think they're a much better team than they were 6 months ago. Tom, though, I mean, are they better? Like, I think they're better than the Rays. I think they're better than the Blue Jays. Are they better than the Orioles? Are they better than the Yankees? I think you can make the case they're better than the Orioles. I'm not so sure about the Yankees yet, but I think they're at least now, for the first time in a few years, they're in that neighborhood.
I think the Yankees have the potential to have like a Super Bowl hangover type season from that fifth inning from the World Series.
5-0 lead.
What an unbelievable
And they weren't going to win that World Series anyway.
No.
But 5-0?
Yeah, it's hard to come back from that, right?
Oh, and
no more Soto. Like I think the Yankees could take a step back.
So the Yankees made the World Series. They lose Soto, but they add Max Fried. So now your rotation has Gerrit Cole and Max Fried. Like, that's pretty damn good. You add Devin Williams, who was the best relief pitcher available and just one of the better relief pitchers in Major League Baseball. And then you add Cody Bellinger. Now, he's not going to give you what Soto gave you, but in the aggregate of those three guys, I think they're probably just as good of a team as they were. And I know if you look at the WAR numbers, it's a little off, but I feel like, again, just having that 1-2 punch and now at the rotation, and now you have Devin Williams. So I would still put the Yankees a little bit ahead of the Red Sox, but it's they're right in that neighborhood now. And like, I know we talked about Dylan Cease. If the Red Sox trade for Dylan Cease, I'd put them ahead of the Yankees. But even as currently constituted, this is not an 81-81. Like, this is probably a 90-win team, maybe more than a 90-win team.
Yeah, that's what it should be. I mean, I would say that the floor for this team in 2025 should be 88 wins. That's the floor in my mind. So, yeah, I think that this team is showing you that they are now serious about wanting to spend money. And this weird 5-year purgatory that the franchise has been in, self-imposed purgatory because they don't want to pay the tax, is seemingly going away. Now, there's still some measures in place, right? Like, the Bregman deal is really a 1-year deal that can be a 3-year deal. And they haven't signed Crochet yet to the long-term extension, but they're at least moving in the direction of showing that they are in the business of acquiring big-name talent again. And I mentioned this earlier in the show, but yes, they were $100 million off on getting Juan Soto, but at least they were in the conversation.
They didn't even meet with Ohtani the year before.
Right.
Just for reference. Yeah.
Exact perfect context to give to it. And they were in the conversation for Yamamoto as well. So another big name guy the year before, and they didn't close the job. With Soto, $700 million plus, 15 years. I mean, that was the reported offer The fact that the Red Sox were even willing to do that is showing you now in hindsight, whereas before they were getting ripped for it, for not getting the job done, now we can look at it and say, oh, that was the first showing that this organization is ready to start spending money again and wants to be competitive and win a World Series now. And maybe they feel like the young guys on the roster and in the farm system have gotten to the level where this organization, this team is now worth investing in a real way.
And I think, too, like you look at the Crochet trade, because last offseason, they could have traded for Dylan Cease. They could have beat that package the Padres gave up. They didn't. They could have traded for Corbin Burns. They didn't. They could have signed Yamamoto. They didn't. They could have signed Blake Snell. They didn't. So getting Crochet was also a signal that, hey, this trade that we couldn't or wouldn't pull off a year ago, we did pull off this time. Now, they got to sign him to the extension. That's the next step. I know. But I look at, you mentioned 88 wins. Like, 88 wins would get them in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
I mean, you look at, and I know it's not apples to apples, but last year, the Yankees won 94 games. I think you take out Soto, you add those other three, they're roughly the same. So, okay, 93, 94 wins. The Orioles won 91 games, but they just lost Corbin Burns. So even if they somehow get to the same point, they're at 91. Cleveland won their division with 92, but Kansas City had 86 wins, and Houston won their division with 88. So if
The AL's wide open.
If the Reds, I agree. If the, because even, look, the Yankees made the World Series. I think they're still good. They're not, like, you look at the, if you listed the top five teams in baseball, what, four of them are in the NL? I mean, Dodgers, Padres, Mets, Phillies, or if you want to swap out Braves for, you know, because a healthy Braves team for the Padres.
Even still, you know, five of the six.
Yeah, like, whereas the Yankees are the only one in that group. And so the AL, it's like, the Red Sox could, and the Orioles have not proven they can win in October. So the Red Sox could beat the Orioles. They could beat Cleveland. They could beat Kansas City. They could beat Houston. So, again, I'm not sitting here guaranteeing they're going to beat all those teams, but whereas last year, I mean, how many times are they not competitive against some of these teams? And even against bad teams, didn't they lose like two games to the White Sox? The White Sox won 23 games all year.
That was the worst stretch of the season, yeah. Was that series.
Yeah, I think at that point the White Sox had like 20 wins and like two of them were against the Red Sox or something ridiculous. But point being, I think the AL is wide open enough that if you get to 90, 91 wins, you're a playoff team. It's not like 2018 where you had to win 100 games to get in or 98 games to get in. Now it's, okay, you win 90 or 91, you're in, and the AL is wide open enough that I think you can go deep. Whereas in the NL, like, no offense, but like, let's say the Pittsburgh Pirates get, you know, with Paul Skeens, let's say they get in the playoffs. So the Cincinnati Reds with our guy Francona get in the playoffs.
I forgot about that. That was awesome.
They're not going to beat the Dodgers, Mets, and Braves. Like, you just, like, they're not going to beat all those three teams to get a lower team in the NL or a wild card team in the NL is not going to beat the Dodgers and the Phillies and the Padres or and the, to get it. I just don't think that's, whereas in the AL, I mean, the Red Sox could beat the Yankees in a series. Like, they could beat the Orioles in a series. Now, could they add Dylan Cease and make me feel a lot better about it? Yeah, but I think they could beat some of these teams in a series just right now, considering they went 81-81 last year.
So you mentioned earlier in the segment the Dylan Cease rumors that have been popping up over the last day or so. So just to catch anyone up that hasn't heard those, both Sean McAdam of Mass Live and Jared Carabas of Underdog Fantasy put this out there. This is from McAdam's piece on Mass Live. He said an industry source confirmed that the Red Sox have been in touch with the San Diego Padres about starting pitcher Dylan Cease, who is being shopped around this spring. That same source cautioned that to date, at least, the interest from the Red Sox has been closer to due diligence level than it is to an aggressive pursuit. But for a pitcher that quality of Cease, the Red Sox at least want to monitor the market. So the fact that they are monitoring the market for guys at that level continues to show you that this front office is willing to invest in 2025 and wants to win now, which is a huge change from how things have been operating over the last 5 years, save for 2021 when they had the ALCS run. But that really just kind of came out of
nowhere. And even that
was almost by accident.
Well, and like, they traded for Kyle Schwarber, who was great, but at the time he was the discount Anthony Rizzo. If you remember, like, so even then they were kind of piecing it together. And like a player like Dylan Cease, 29 years old, top five in Cy Young voting twice in the last 3 years. Like, this is one of the elite pitchers in the game. A guy who could come in and be an ace over Crochet. That's how good he is. And they'd battle for it. But like,
no, I think he'd be the number one.
Yeah, and that's how good he is. And he's done it in the AL. He's done it in the NL. So I think you bring in a guy like that, I think it puts the World Series on the table. I think right now, I look at a ceiling for this team. If Bregman's healthy, if you know one of the young guys pops, if Crochet can throw 180 innings, is the ALCS. And then we'll see. I think that's kind of where it's at. You bring in Cease, I think you're in the World Series, or you can get to the World Series.
Do you want to hear my ideal starting nine for the Red Sox?
Can we put a pin in it for later, because we're going to talk to Lou Maloney?
Let me run it by Lou, and maybe he can tell me if it's good.
We got Lou Maloney coming up next from Fort Myers to talk all things Red Sox. But before we get to any of that, it's time to trend with new producer Tom Crisafulli. John Lyons. Alongside Tom Carroll on WEI, we've got Lou Maloney coming up in just a few minutes. Still down in Fort Myers. He was at that press conference this morning. And I'm really interested to get his thoughts on a bunch of what we've been talking about, because if the Red Sox, Tom, are signaling a change in how they're doing things, an increased aggressiveness, hopefully this is just step one. Like, this is year one in that. And I wonder how the prospects line up with it. I wonder how their whole timeline is. But the hope is this is not a flash in the pan off season. It's year one of kind of the next phase.
Yeah, and there's been smoke about Vladdy Guerrero Jr. being a guy that's going to be in Boston here next year, right? So maybe this is laying the foundation down. And if this team can be really good this year and win 88, 89, 90 games, have a playoff run, whatever, Bregman changes the culture, Crochet comes in and dominates, then Boston is a hot baseball market again. That's going to make this an even more attractive place to come, especially if the franchise shows it's open for business and willing to pay lots of money for good players.
And joining us now on the phone line is Lou Maloney. Lou, welcome into the program. How are you, man?
Man, I'm doing great. Right now I'm on like hole 16, par 3, but it's going so poorly for me that I've decided to take a mental break for this hole.
So, Lou, I was just going to say, you've been a lot busier than us over the past few days with all these Red Sox, the signings, the press conferences, everything. I mean, how is the vibe of everything down in spring training right now?
It feels normal again. You know what I mean? Like too many times you come down here in camp the last two or three years and you know, you're talking to players on the side, and it's like, hey, what's going on? Like, why didn't we do this? I thought we were doing that. Why aren't we, you know? And I think this year, that's not normal, by the way. And this year, it kind of feels like it is. Like, guys kind of walking into camp excited to come in, you know, wanting to work out, looking around the clubhouse and seeing, you know, Garrett Crochet and Walker Buehler and Aroldis Chapman and now, Alex Bregman. I mean, it's like, yeah, like, let's go. Let's do this. When did the game start?
So, Lou, what changed for this front office? Like, what clicked where they were like, you know what? Let's start operating how we used to operate. And now you can see the buzz in the city is real for the Red Sox again, going into spring training and then eventually towards opening day. That hasn't been here in 5 years, 6 years, maybe longer.
Yeah, no, it's, I was talking about it like last year a lot, like why they didn't spend. And I'm like, the reality is they didn't believe in the team. And they were sort of realized where they were, and they, you know, unfortunately they just didn't say it. You know, if they came out a couple years ago and said, listen, we need to see what we have. Like, we're not going to spend. And I don't agree with that, by the way, because I think you spend right to the cap, and while you're rebuilding, you spend money while the kids are performing, but that's not the avenue they went. And by kind of giving guys opportunities to play and learn at this level, you found out what, you know, Casas and Wong and, Hamilton and Rafaela and Hauk and Bayo and Crawford Abreu, you found out like maybe what they could do. So in hindsight, if it was just a little bit more openness, transparency of what was really going on, because they didn't spend the last 2 years, let's face it. And once they saw that, they have shown in the past that when they think they're ready to win, that they'll spend like they did in 16 when the system was where it was, and 17 and then 18 finally, you know, getting over the top here with the guys like JD Martinez. So it's just, for them, it's sort of like timing, you know, and agree with it, disagree with it. I'd always like to see them spend regardless, but now is the time to spend, given what they saw and where these kids are in AAA.
So, Lou, Alex Bregman comes in as someone that won a gold glove at third base last year. Early reports are he's going to play second base, but it feels like Alex Cora, at least to me, Lou, has been a little bit tepid on where exactly Bregman might play, and he's mentioned about having conversations with Devers. How do you expect, or how do you think this could kind of shake out? Like, is Bregman just their second baseman? Is this contingent on Christian Campbell and how he does? Like, how do you think this is going to shake out?
It's kind of, honestly, the way it should be. Like, I'll say this. Right now, Alex Bregman's your second baseman. Unless Christian Campbell proves that he can play second base and he's ready to play in the big leagues defensively. Okay, offensively, everybody thinks he's ready. Defensively, there needs to be some proof there because, you know, we go over this all the time. Everyone's like, well, Devers is an awful third baseman, you know, and Bregman's an improvement. Yeah, he is. But do we realize how bad second base has been for the last 3 or 4 years? Like, have you seen Grissom last year? He wasn't comfortable playing second. The best second baseman they got is David Hamilton. He's not an everyday player. So if Campbell can't turn a double play and if Grissom can't turn a double play, I want Bregman at second. Those are more important. You know, Devers, he is what he is. You know what I mean? But it's like, I need somebody to be able to catch the baseball at second before Bregman gets off of it. And if somebody knocks the door down and shows that they can handle it, then you make that move and he becomes your third baseman. Devers is your DH, your slow play Yoshida. Maybe he's not ready to start the year, you know, in quotes. IL for the first 2 or 3 weeks. And then, you know what? You play it out. I guarantee by the end of April, someone gets hurt.
So with
not
Devers,
that I wanted to, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's baseball for you. But when it comes to Devers, and you mentioned it, you know, Bregman, if he ends up at third, Devers is your DH. But it's been made clear with the reporting, and he hasn't come out and said it per se, but he doesn't want to be a DH. And if it does come to a situation where Campbell shows he's ready to be your second baseman and Bregman moves to third, sorry, buddy, you got to go and be the DH. Sorry, you got to go and be a hitter, which you are awesome at. And in theory, that should make you a better hitter if you just have to focus on that. Yeah. So what's the hang up there for Devers? Why is he slow to want to embrace that?
There isn't. That's over with. I mean, they've already had conversations. I think he's willing to, he's not worried about it. I don't think anybody's really worried about it. I mean, it'll be an adjustment trying to learn how to DH, but I think the minute they got involved with Arenado and Bregman a while back, like, they could say whatever they want publicly. They've had discussions with him. And, pride's going to be hurt a little bit because I think everybody takes pride in, you know, so I didn't have the great year defensively. I can keep working, try to get better and show everybody what I can do. And then they say, you know what, that attempt is over. You're now a DH. So I don't think anyone's really worried about it at all. I think he'll accept it when it comes to that, which I think will happen. You know, again, like Bregman, if he starts at second base because they don't feel second baseman's ready, I think Alex Bregman, if he's here for 3 years or if he's here for 2 years, he's playing more third base than he is second. I think he ends the year at third.
So, Lou, I think, and I want to get your opinion on this as a player, I think one of the most valuable pieces of the Bregman signing is the fact that it's a guy who's been a leader on two world championship teams, and he's played in October. Yeah. He's won those rings. Because you look at this Red Sox lineup, Devers won a World Series, but he was really in the pecking order, the third or fourth guy on that 2018 team. Nobody else has had deep October experience. I mean, how valuable is what Bregman, from a championship experience perspective, brings to the table. How valuable can that be to this lineup?
Yeah, he's extremely valuable in all aspects. That's one of them. 99 playoff games. Devers is, what, 26? Story's got 5. That's it. No one else has been in the postseason. Like, nobody, as far as hitters go. So, you know, the game changes there. There's some experience. The game speeds up on you. To have a guy that kind of treats the postseason like it's the regular season, it doesn't change for him. It doesn't affect him. Let these guys know what to expect. You know, that press conference, I don't know if you heard it off, but, like, the first 30 seconds, like, they asked Alex a question, Bregman, and he's just like, listen, I've been to the playoffs 8 straight years. I plan on being back there again this year. I'm a winning player. These are winning teams, and we're going to win. And sat back in the seat, and I was like, damn.
It's music to my ears, Lou. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, his locker's right next to Campbell. He's out there watching him take ground balls. Like, that is where the value comes in. Like, obviously, he's, I think, a very good player, and he's a gold glove defender wherever he plays on the dirt. But these conversations with these young guys, like, It is so needed. Like, Devers just isn't that guy. You know, like, that's whatever. It is what it is. Story is, but he's been hurt a lot, right? So to bring a guy like Bregman to sit and talk to these guys about, like, you know, what are you thinking? What's your approach? By the way, what do you think this guy's going to do to you? You know, and just those conversations are so valuable in the regular season. In the postseason, it's even more so.
Do you think they're done? Do you think that they're going to go out and make another move? Okay.
No, I don't. I think and we'll see what happens. I mean, yeah, you're still hearing them talking to teams, you know, whether it's through trade or whatnot. Like, I tell you, the one thing I don't get is, and I don't know, I haven't talked to anybody about it, like, David Robertson's still sitting out there, correct? Unless he signed today? Like,
as far as I know, deal. Yeah, like, he's still out there, yeah.
Like, it's a one-year deal. Like, I want as many opportunities, as many kicks to can, you know, as I possibly can with an experienced guy like that. Like, just out there with the rest of this group. The other area, too, that is a little concerning is catcher. You know, like, Connor's done a really nice job of posting the last couple of years as an everyday guy. If he goes down for a month, like, I don't know. Like, Carlos Narváez is here. They like him. He's a AAA big league guy, and they like him a lot. But then who's your backup? You know, I guess you can go find a Danny Jansen at all times. But I don't know. I'd like to see him get one more reliever.
Talking with Lou Maloney here on WEEI. Lou, I want to ask you about Garrett Crochet, who's been traded for to be the ace of this staff. Last season, he was sensational in his work with the White Sox, but only threw 146 innings last year, and I know a lot of that was intentional and how they managed him. But with that limited experience and the limited innings last year, from what you've seen, how are the Red Sox managing his ramp-up so he can hopefully throw 175, 180 innings or more this year?
Yeah, I think you kind of look at his year, and we saw with a guy like Cutter Crawford, too, to where it was like, you know, once you get to 140, 150, you know, all hands off the next year, like, we're good. Like, we got that foundation year. The White Sox did a nice job with him, managing him, and you know, they could have given him six or seven more just starts all out and then stop him. Instead, it was, no, we're going to get you 30 starts, but we're only limiting you for 60 pitches, you know, four innings at a time. So I think they did a good job of doing your work for you, setting this guy up to sort of, you know, go 180 innings, go 185 innings. That's a nice buildup from 145, whatever he was. So I don't think they're too concerned about it really at all. So I think they're just excited to see this guy take the mound every fifth day.
So sticking with pitching, there's been some smoke the last day or so with Dylan Cease and the Padres and possibly making a move there. The Red Sox doing their due diligence more than an aggressive pursuit is what Sean McAdam said with Mass Live. From what you've seen from Dylan Cease, let's not talk about if you think it's going to get done or anything like that, but just as a guy that watches the sport and has watched Cease, what do you see in him that could be a huge benefit for the Red Sox bringing in a player like that?
Well, I mean, he's a stud. You know, I mean, he's a guarantee. You know, it's almost like a Corbin Burns signing for the Orioles. You know what he's going to be, you know. The question is, you know, it's just an odd signing, right? Like, you're sitting there like, okay, I mean, you got Crochet, you got Buehler, you got Giolito, you're sitting there with six. Now, there's some concerns, you know, with Crawford, maybe that knee, patella, they think it's just some tendonitis. Bale was just recently shut down. He started throwing again, little soreness in his shoulder. So I don't know, but it's like, you know, it's 1 year of Dylan Cease, you know, like it's, I don't know, it's uncomfortable. Who are you going to give up for him? Like, to me, it feels like Baltimore Orioles written all over it. And if you know that Cease is going to get dealt, I think you continue to make calls just to monitor the market to see what it could take. You might be surprised what the asking price is. You never want to be surprised and be like, damn, we could have done that. You know, so I think it's more of that. And to be honest with you, my opinion, hopefully you're having conversations with San Diego, and while you're talking about mentioning Dylan Cease, you're talking about Suarez, because that's the dude that I want, their closer.
Well, I wouldn't mind Fernando Tatis Jr. either.
Look, yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. Look,
let's get greedy.
Yeah, why not? Look, Lou, we've talked a lot in this show already ourselves, and we kind of alluded to it earlier in your call. Now that they've brought in a Crochet, a Bregman, as you said, it feels like they believe in this team. What are your expectations? I mean, this team that went 81-81 last year, but they feel a lot better than they were last season. I know it's early, but just from what you've seen, what are your kind of expectations for the Red Sox this year?
It's to make the playoffs, period. If they don't, it'll be a massive disappointment. So before, I always felt like to be in it, to have a shot, you know, the last few years, you'd say things like, I just want meaningful baseball in September. And if everything breaks right, if guys get healthy, if guys step up, whatever, maybe you got a shot. And it was kind of like that last year for about 5 months. Like, you're in it. Guys were stepping up, but they just ran out of gas. They didn't have enough bullets. You know, they had too many young guys experiencing pressure games in September and August, and that wears you down. So those guys got another year under their belt. But it's simple. I mean, it's if you don't make the playoffs, this is a huge disappointment.
So, Lou, before we let you go, I just wanted to mention I am a former intern of Mutt and Merlone back in the summer of 2013 during that magical summer.
Sorry
for
about
the
that.
Red Sox. Yeah. Look, it was a great year of baseball. I don't know if it was a great summer of radio, but I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that. And thanks for coming on with us, man. It's good,
you
kind of a full circle moment here for me, being your former intern and now getting to talk with you on the radio. So really appreciate it.
Oh, good, man. Oh, good. People,
enjoy those last
let me
two
ask
holes.
You guys a question.
Sure.
Yep. Let me ask you guys a question. Are the people kind of still crapping on the Bregman deal, trying to just be angry for no reason at all, or is everybody kind of excited?
Lou, as you know, we work in sports radio, so everyone hates everything at all times. You know, so but look. Yeah. I got to say, just from a lot of what I've seen and talking to fans, and I think a lot of people are pretty happy about it. I mean, I think from a lot of the fans we've talked to, Lou, it's a guy people actually know, right? It's a big name, a champion that they know is going to be good. And, you know, the opt-out thing after a year, I think, is something that people are like, oh, maybe Christian Campbell will be good, or maybe he'll stay, or maybe they'll sign someone else. But as I said, we work in sports radio, so everyone hates everything. But a lot of this reaction, I will say, has been pretty good.
I think most of it has been positive. I think when you're hearing the negative feedback on Bregman, it's people looking for another angle. They just don't want to be
excited. They don't want the Red Sox to be good.
It helps their narrative. It helps their agenda to say, oh, well, actually, it's only a one-year deal. And, oh, like, he's actually a declining player. And you know, it's like, come on. Like, they just spent a lot of money to go get a stud who's won a lot in the postseason. Like, they need this guy in the clubhouse. Shut up.
Yeah, and to me, the biggest thing, too, is just to kind of, you know, they'll never spend again. You know, this is the way it's always going to be. And it just sort of was like, okay, hold off on that thought. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is, and that's important back home. Mm-hmm. People want to see this team spend. And then by doing this move, it sort of brings you like, okay, you know, that's where people are like, okay, maybe we will be back acting like the Red Sox again. So it's a positive.
That'll be fun.
He is Lou Merlone, and he's got to get back out to the golf course to get a couple holes in one before the end of the day. Lou, we really appreciate you taking the time, and have a great rest of your round.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. All right, rest of it at least.
All right, thanks, Lou.
All right, he is Lou Merlone, and I think it's pretty reasonable. They're a playoff team. He said if they don't make the playoffs, it's a big disappointment. I would agree with that. I think they should be a playoff team. His mention of the Orioles and Cease kind of opened my ears a little bit, because Corbin Burnes went there, and I was like, uh-oh, this is a World Series contender. And I know it didn't work out. Dylan Cease, to me, very similar to Corbin Burnes, you know, both great players. If Dylan Cease goes to the Orioles, now I'm looking like, all right, maybe they're equal with the Red Sox. Like, right now, I would take the Red Sox over the Orioles for the season. I would take them over the Orioles in a playoff series. They get Dylan Cease. All of a sudden, I'm like,
evens it out.
I think they're even out. And I think that would be a great move for the Orioles. Of course, the Orioles made a great move with Corbin Burnes, didn't keep him. They have a new owner in David Rubenstein who says he's going to spend, but they haven't. I mean, you want to talk about a team that should be pissed? This is a tangent. The Orioles and their fans should be pissed. That is a team that is methodically built for 10 years through the draft, international signings, the farm system. They are now a great team, and they won't re-sign their ace when the owner says he wants to spend. So if they get Dylan Cease, they better extend him. If I was doing sports talk radio in Baltimore, I'd be a little more angry.
Yeah, I mean, they've had two different rebuilds this century where they reached sort of like that pinnacle World Series caliber level and then tore it down both times without a ring to show for it. So, yeah, that's a tortured fan base for sure.
Yeah, and the reason I think that's a lineup. I mean, we know how good Adley Rutschman is and those guys, but like, that's a really, really good lineup. They're still loaded with prospects because they were bad for so long, and they have such a good development system. So I think if you add Cease to that mix, then they're on the level of the Red Sox. I think if you add Cease to the Red Sox, they can kind of separate things. And it seems like he's pretty optimistic. Garrett Crochet will give you 30 starts in 180 innings just based off kind of what he's seen so far.
Yeah, and I was interested to hear Lou say that he doesn't really seem all that hot on Cease. Like, he knows he's a stud and that he's a proven commodity and would come in here and be dominant if they can pull that off. But it seems like Lou is a little bit more tempered when it comes to giving up prospects for a short-term rental for Cease. So if you can bring in Cease with the idea that you're signing him to an extension shortly thereafter, that's a different story. And then that goes back to something we talked about earlier in the show, where we haven't seen this version of the Red Sox willing to give top dollar long contracts to pitchers in their late 20s, early 30s in a while.
The last one was Chris Sale. And obviously that blew up in their face.
It blew up in their face.
But I hope they don't let Chris Sale prevent them from extending a Crochet. And I know that they're going to extend Crochet, but I think I don't want them to prevent that Chris Sale to prevent them from, say, trading for and extending a guy like Cease.
And that's what I was going to say. That's where it could possibly get in the way is a Cease situation who's got, what, 4 or 5 years on Crochet.
Yeah, and Cease just turned 29, though. Like, right. He turned 29 in late December. So you got – and – Chris Sale had an injury history. He had a history of breaking down later in the year.
Chris Sale is made of paper.
Right.
And he did it again this year in Atlanta. He won the Cy Young, but down the stretch he fell apart. And he broke apart because that's what happens with Chris Sale. That's who he is. And it stinks because when he was at his peak...
He's awesome.
He was so fun. He might be one of my... Outside of Pedro, he might be my favorite Red Sox pitcher to watch of my lifetime when he was at his peak. But it just... We didn't get to see it that much because he was hurt all the time.
Yeah, so I think that just when he said Orioles and Cease, that my ears open for them. But that was Lou Maloney checking in from Fort Myers. Still got a lot to get to here. We'll be here until 6 o'clock. I'm John Lyons alongside Tom Carroll. We're taking your calls and texts on everything Red Sox, Patriots. We're going to get into some Celtics next hour as well at the All Star break. 617-779-7937. We'll be right back. That was the Four Nations last night. USA with a 3-1 win. Awesome, awesome game. I'm John Lyons alongside Tom Carroll. Tom Crisafulli, our new producer for the last couple hours of the show. By the way, Tom, catch those fights early on?
That was electric.
Yeah.
Playoff hockey in February.
Is that what you do on campus? 3 fights every 9 seconds?
Yeah, I just go and start beating Canadians on campus who boo my anthem.
All right, there we go. We just beat Canadians on campus. Thanks. That'll get us a lot of listeners up north. Great. 617-779-7937 is the call line. And... the text line, we do have a text here about Tom's article on his Substack, his weight loss journey, which, folks, if you have not seen this article, it is fantastic. It's a great story, too. Not just the Tom sitting across from me here, and he's going to buy me one of those Four Nations hats. It's already been written, right? Everyone here, he's buying me one. But the person wants to know where they can find it, Tom, if you could just give us a little summary where they can find it.
Yeah, so you can check out my essay at chickfiletom.substack.com. And you can also check it out on my socials at yaboytcfresh. That's YABOITCFresh. And that's where the essay lives. It's pretty long, so carve out yourself about 20, 30 minutes to give it a read. But you can check it all out there.
Yeah, and as I said, not just because you're sitting across from me, it's a great story. We also talked about it last hour. If you missed any of that or any of the show, including Lou Maloney's guest appearance, our wisdom on the Red Sox and Patriots as well, the Odyssey app is free. You can also go on Apple Podcasts, WEI.com. Maybe you can get it through Carrier Pigeon. I don't know. But there's a way to find it if you want to find it. Four Nations last night, Tom. That was for an all-star game experience. I would say in my lifetime, I'm in my early 30s. I like to tell people I'm 29, but I'm in my early 30s. In my lifetime, probably the coolest all-star experience. Outside of Fenway in 99, which obviously, for me personally, that was at Fenway. But as far as pure all-star, that and Fenway 99, two best I've ever seen.
Yeah, I find it hard to even put what we saw at Fenway in 99 even in the same category, just because international play is going to trump baseball that doesn't count for anything, right? So, and I know Pedro was incredible, and that's a moment that everyone will always remember, and the home run derby that season was awesome, but this was different, man. This was Canada-US, and the US played outstanding. McAvoy had the hit on McDavid.
Turning point in the game.
That was like Pete Rose mowing someone over at home plate in the All-Star game back in the day.
Except people like McAvoy.
Right, but
sorry, Pete Rose. I actually met Pete Rose once in Vegas.
Rest in peace.
That was
That was an experience. In Vegas. Of course I met him in Vegas.
I was going to say, there's nowhere else other than Cooperstown where I think he would go every year and sign autographs.
I will say, that town makes some money off him. Like, you go to Cooperstown, a lot of those stores, there's Pete Rose jerseys. Pete Rose memorabilia. I've been to Cooperstown twice, and both times I walk around, I'm like, there's a lot of Pete Rose stuff here.
Yeah.
For a guy who's not allowed in.
Yeah, well, someone
a lot of Barry Bonds stuff too. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's there.
It's true. So for me, last night in Montreal was the best All-Star quote unquote experience, and the reason why, it wasn't really an All-Star experience. And I think a lot of these leagues, all of these leagues, I should say, should adopt something as close to this as they possibly can, because you just saw it. The guys actually wanted to play. They actually wanted to go out there and compete in a real way and play hard. Football has reverted to this flag football thing.
And
that
football
stinks.
I get, because it's such a violent sport.
It's a violent game.
I get it.
Right.
I just wish there was a better... So I don't know what the solution in football is.
The solution
is
they shouldn't have it. They just really shouldn't.
Just name the Pro Bowl team. Or maybe just do the skills competition and nothing else.
I think if they did the Pro Bowl the way they did it as a flag football game, without the jumping in the foam pits afterwards and the games in between, and like kept it to a succinct, clean flag football game that is easy to watch and isn't going to take your entire day to watch like it did this year for me. I had to watch it for work. It was awful.
Feel bad for you.
It was terrible. If they just had it be a normal game of flag football without all of the unneeded pop-in circumstance, I think it would be a lot more enjoyable and would work. The NBA, while it's fun to see teams put up almost 200 points in a game,
I don't think that's... Honestly, though, I love...
so fast, man.
I love the Celtics. We're going to talk about the Celtics coming up in our next segment. Love the Celtics. I love basketball in the NBA. The last few NBA All-Star games, not entertaining.
No,
and Tatum won the MVP one of it. I'm like, this is not entertaining.
No, and I know like the last 5 minutes of an All-Star game, people say, oh, that's when they actually start to try because they want to win the MVP award because it's called the Kobe Award, blah, blah, blah. No, it's awful. So you get rid of that. The MLB All-Star game,
I know you
mentioned it.
Yeah.
You're into it. I'm not really as into it. I could do without it, to be honest. I think that these leagues need to adopt something that's going to get their players excited about it and want them to participate in it and play hard in it. And I think the NHL really stumbled on something here. And I think that they need to do everything in their power to keep it in the mix as much as possible moving forward. And I know next year they have the Olympic break during the All-Star break. And then the year after that, 2027, they're going to go back to four nations. Actually, no, sorry. In 2027, they're in theory going to go back to a traditional All-Star game format. And then 2028, they're going to do a World Cup of Hockey with eight teams. I think that they would be crazy if they had a 2027 All-Star game that was just a typical All-Star game after seeing what we saw happen in Montreal last night and what we've seen in the last few days with this tournament and what we should expect to see here in Boston over the next few days. The energy was amazing. There was real buzz for it online. It got way more conversation, at least in my personal circles and from what I saw online, than from the NBA dunk contest and the skills competition and the three-point competition from last night, which was a joke. A G League player has now won three consecutive dunk contests. And look, he's amazing. Mac McClung is a joy to watch.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me that if NBA guys actually wanted to put in the effort to win
John Morant, Jaylen Brown, and LeBron did the dunk contest.
Or Zion, even.
Yeah.
It would be...
And we've seen this
so
international
fun.
Stuff work. Like, think about the USA-France gold medal game in basketball this summer. That was awesome.
Yep.
The World Baseball Classic, Ohtani facing Trout for the win. That was awesome. So we've seen this work so far, and I know we have a game in Boston Monday night you'll be at. We got a game Thursday night in Boston you'll be at. Follow Tom on Twitter and on the WEI website for coverage of that. I think we're going to look back on this and say, man, that's the way to go.
Yes.
Like that's,
and I think the NBA needs to adopt this.
Yeah,
it needs to be like a Team USA versus the world. It would be awesome.
Yeah.
And that world team would be unstoppable.
Giannis,
yeah, I think they'd be the favorites
Jokic,
by far, and I
Luka,
think they'd play hard.
SGA.
It would be really,
and I think
really
with
fun.
The NBA, tell them, hey, what USA versus the world, winner gets $1 million each.
Right.
And they'll go all, that'd be cool.
And they'd be able to get the corporate sponsorship for it. I mean, oh, yeah. That entire thing last night in San Francisco was just one big commercial for Kia, which was another huge turnoff for me. And I had it as like my flip back, and I DVR'd it so I could see if I missed anything. I didn't. Every single time I flipped back to it, it was in a commercial break. There were so many commercials during that thing. And I get it. They have to keep it on the air, right? That's how you pay the bills. You get commercials. But man, they sold the crap out of that thing. And there was not a lot going for it when the commercials weren't playing. And when the action, quote unquote, was happening, there wasn't a lot of action. And when you have four guys participating and two of them are missing most of their dunks and are far from household names, and the only reason why I know who Castle is from the Spurs is because of his time at UConn, and he is
and
good
the
on the Spurs,
Celtics played
right?
him like four nights
right.
ago, yeah.
But, man, that needs a huge facelift, and I think skewing international in some way is the way to go for the NBA.
And now we're going to talk about some actual cool NBA stuff. The Celtics at the All-Star break. We're going to get into that coming up next. They're a little bit off their pace of last year. I still think they're the best team in the NBA, but there have been some concerns this year. Are they back on track? What are we expecting from them coming out of this All-Star break? We'll have all that and more coming up next here on WEEI.